Hello and welcome to another edition of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast where we review movies, talk news, do a couple fun little segments, and recommend something to you at the end. Today we are reviewing the brand new film from Christopher Nolan, Dunkirk. Tonight I am joined by my co-hosts Trevor Allison and Jake Brown. How are we doing, guys?
Doing well.
Doing good, man.
Awesome. And I'm Cameron Slanina. And let's go ahead and, well, before we get into news from Comic-Con, Trevor, you want to talk Spider-Man for a quick a little bit.
Yeah, as you guys may or may not remember, I was in Utah a couple weeks ago. Finally, so I missed Spider-Man Homecoming, which I was super stoked about. Finally got to see it on Saturday, and I was not let down at all. This movie was freaking awesome. I just listened to the pod with you guys earlier talking about it, and I completely echo every single thing that you guys said. Tom Holland is perfect, which is funny because he's a British theater kid, but he totally makes it work. It's so awesome. He's fantastic. It's a coming-of-age high school movie that just so happens to have a superhero as the main character, and it works so well. It has like a Shyamalan-level twist in it that I did not expect that was awesome.
Shyamalan? You put that up there with Shyamalan?
Okay, maybe a Crazy Stupid Love level twist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
More accurate. It's hilarious. It's really funny. I think between this and Wonder Woman, we've seen maybe two of the five best comic book movies from this golden age of comic book movies that we're in just in the last couple months. I loved this movie. It was awesome.
Trevor, where does this rank for you on your list of, like, is this top three? Is this number one? Where is this on your list of Marvel films?
For Marvel, it's probably somewhere 3, 4, 5. I think it's the best standalone superhero film. I don't know if it's as good as the first Avengers. And also maybe Civil War is better. Civil War, I know, is technically a Captain America movie, but it's an Avengers movie. But it's right up there with those. I think it's as good as anything else, and I don't think you'd be crazy if you thought it was your favorite Marvel movie.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's gonna think that it's a bad thing to have that up there. But yeah, good. I'm glad you liked it. We kind of thought this would be the perfect Trevor movie, so I'm glad we were right.
You guys nailed it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. But that leads perfectly into our talk of Comic-Con. And Comic-Con, for those of you who don't know, is an annual convention held in San Diego. Well, there's Comic-Cons held all over. The main big one, though, is held in San Diego. And every year, comic book films, kind of nerd pop culture-y stuff is presented. And there's always a lot of movie news. And I'm going to quickly rattle off some big things that happened at Comic-Con. And then we'll talk a little bit about them afterwards. So Marvel, getting started with Marvel. The first thing that they showed was brand new footage from Thor Ragnarok, debuted a new trailer. It was fantastic, beautiful, bright, colorful, funny. They came out today and Taika Waititi said that they probably improvised 80% of the dialogue in the movie. Pretty much anything that didn't have to be improvised as far as like canon goes, they improvised, which is just hysterical and makes me want Chris Hemsworth in a comedy. Black Panther footage was supposedly the only thing that got a standing ovation during the Marvel panel. And I don't mean that to say like Marvel panel was bad. I mean to say that like the Black Panther footage was amazing. And that hasn't been released online, but I'm hearing good things. So that's great. Captain Marvel, the film starring Brie Larson, will actually be set in the 1990s and will feature the alien Skrulls, which are a huge, huge player in the Marvel comic book, so that'll be interesting. And Samuel L. Jackson will have both of his eyes in this new Captain Marvel film.
He may not by the end of the movie, though.
You know that they're going to work that in there. That's how it happens.
They have to.
And it's going to be something like, I'm tired of these mother freaking aliens shooting my mother freaking eyes. Samuel L. Jackson, do your thing, buddy. We love you. And then one of the other smaller things to happen was Ant-Man and Wasp announced that Michelle Pfeiffer will be playing Janet Van Dyne, who was the original Wasp. She's the Wasp to Michael Douglas's Ant-Man, just as Hope, Evangeline Lilly, is the Wasp to Paul Rudd's Ant-Man, because they're kind of pairs in that set. But and then to finish it off, they also showed the footage that they showed from D23 for Avengers Infinity War. So that's kind of Marvel. Guys, anything that stood out to you from this Marvel panel?
Black Panther and Avengers. Like, I'm super pumped about it. Both of them. I think we're all at the point with Marvel films that, like, they announce something and everyone's just like, okay, I'm in. Like, that's all you need to do. So that's basically how I feel about all of this.
Yeah, that's
stuff.
Why I told you guys earlier today, I am abstaining from viewing the Thor trailer. I don't need it. I mean, I think that's a wise move. It's going to, the first trailer was awesome. It's going to be awesome. Even though I've seen it already, I'm ready to laugh at the "we know each other from work" joke when I see it in the theater, because that's like, that's A+ comedy right there.
Yeah,
I'm excited about Black Panther, excited about Captain Marvel. I'm meh on Michelle Pfeiffer, but I mean, it's all going to be good. I'm not worried.
Yeah, it's all exciting stuff. I went ahead and watched the Thor Ragnarok trailer because in my head, Marvel had already showed me, we may show you a lot of stuff in Spider-Man, but the movie's still enjoyable. And so I'm kind of on this side where I was like, I'm not going to watch anything other than the first teaser, to now I'm like, maybe me watching trailers isn't a bad thing. Like, maybe that's, if the movie's good, the movie's
gonna
be good.
They know what they're
doing. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely true.
They know how to market a movie.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'll agree with that. Yeah.
Across the aisle, then we get to DC, and right before Comic-Con, Wednesday, Thursday, right as Comic-Con's getting started, we have rumors that Ben Affleck is out as Batman, and that after the Justice League film, for Matt Reeves' solo film, The Batman, that they will probably be casting someone new or handing off the mantle to like a Dick Grayson type, so that Ben Affleck can fall out of the DCU, which is interesting. I think that's been a rumor that's been around for a while. But then Ben Affleck is so Bruce Wayne that I now just subconsciously merge the two. Gosh, Bruce Wayne directed The Town so well. But Ben Affleck said at Comic-Con. Can you imagine? That'd be amazing. It'd be like Elon Musk directing a movie. Ben Affleck said that he isn't going anywhere at Comic-Con. He said he's here to stay, which sounds like the exact thing that someone would say if a studio was like, dude, you've got to calm it down. DC announced a ton of movies. They announced Wonder Woman. They kind of just name-dropped a bunch of crap. Like, they were like, we're so excited. We're going to be doing Green Lantern Corps. We're going to be doing Aquaman, Wonder Woman 2. And they just kind of name-dropped a bunch of movies. And in there, among like the exciting things like Wonder Woman 2 and the fact that they're doing Suicide Squad 2, which, why? But okay, whatever. was the fact that the Flash movie is titled Flashpoint, which for those of you guys that have read the comics know that that's a very pivotal storyline in the DC comics universe, because that kind of resets everything. And so people are already theorizing, well, maybe Ben Affleck is out and Flashpoint will reset everything to where they can cast someone new as Bruce Wayne, Batman. Aquaman footage got huge reviews, which it's like, guys, it's Jason Momoa. What do you think? How do you think this is going to go? It's going to be amazing. And James Wan. And then they dropped the Justice League trailer, which got me insanely hopeful about this movie. I was kind of excited after watching this. But then today it came out that they are doing extensive reshoots on Justice League, where normal reshoots may cost like $6 to $8 million on the high end. Justice League is pouring $25 million into reshoots. And supposedly with Whedon coming in, it now feels like two separate movies, where the action set pieces are still going to be the same. And they have quoted as been saying that the action set pieces are usable, which isn't very encouraging, but that's something.
Zack Snyder can shoot an action piece.
Yes, he can.
Yeah.
What if that was like Zack Snyder's thing? Was he like, look, I'm done directing. All I'm gonna do is be like a consultant on action scenes. That's it.
That's what he needs to do. Yeah. He and Michael Bay need to form a visual and like action production company.
And Peter Berg.
Just like they could call, they yes. their business cards could be like, do you want to make your movie sicker than hell? Call us.
It's called like Bro Enterprises or something.
Yes.
But so, I mean, what are you, where are you, Trevor, did you watch the Justice League trailer?
I did because, I'm like reluctantly in on this Snyderverse, the DC Snyderverse. So, I mean, you know, of course, like the rest of us, or like the rest of you guys, Wonder Woman pulled us back in a big way. After the other movies, it kind of pushed us out. I'm definitely intrigued. The new trailer made it look a lot better than the first trailer. It looks brighter yeah. and happier and more fun than the like, oh, we're all going to die. Let's gather the heroes. Kind of feel the first one. I have skepticism about the Affleck thing. I think he's going to stick around. I think there's going to be too much money at stake for everyone. And I think that Flashpoint is a bad name because there's like three TV shows that have that name. If for no other reason than that, like, I mean, I'm excited about that. Might be my favorite casting of the whole universe is to have Ezra Miller play the Flash. I think that's really interesting. So I am excited for the movie, but
as someone who's a big fan of the TV show The Flash, it's very frustrating that they have these like alternate universes and like I don't even know what if they've technically explained it or not, but it's you have Grant Gustin playing the Flash on TV and then Ezra Miller in the movie, and it's I thought it'd be a great, like, if I'm a DC exec, I'm going, we already have a built-in fan base of people, millions of people watching The Flash every week, and we're not going to just go ahead and continue that in a movie. That seems iffy to me.
I think there's, but, because it was kind of a surprise hit, I think there'd be too much retconning to do. I'm not very familiar with the storylines, yeah, but that could that could be an issue.
Jake, where are you on DC's Comic-Con experience?
I mean, I'm excited about Justice League, like mildly excited. I loved Wonder Woman just like everybody else in the world. And as Trevor said, it reluctantly kind of pulled me back in, but I still feel like DC is really putting the cart before the horse on this. And I don't know, the trailer was good, but at the same time, it was like, it was just so like, please like us. Like the first shot is like Wonder Woman being cool. Then it's like, okay, funny joke and happy music. Here we go, guys. This is gonna be awesome. And I don't know. I'm in, like I'm gonna see it, but I still have mild expectations. And then the rest of the DC universe, I mean, who knows if any of that's gonna happen. The Flash film has had like what, six directors at this point, so I don't really trust anything they say,
but you know, we're close.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, if you had asked me who probably had a richer comic library to pull stories from, I would say DC.
Absolutely. And absolutely,
yeah, the DC characters are more interesting.
Yeah, and so it's interesting that they're failing so much. Yeah, and they're definitely more iconic. Like, I don't think if, like, pre-films, I don't think any Marvel character holds a candle to Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman.
Agreed.
Like, those three are just iconic. And so, I mean, even some of their lesser, like, Green Lantern, Hawkman, I mean, they have Flash. Like, they have some very iconic heroes, and so the fact that they just can't get this right, I think just goes to show, one, how great of a job Feige's doing at Marvel, and two, how confused DC is on what people actually want from their movies. Like, I love Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, but I don't want a whole universe built off of those.
Yeah, I think that was the success of those films really put them in the position they're in a big way.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. Stranger Things put out a trailer from season two. I think we've all seen season one, all big fans of season one. Trevor, you're not watching this trailer either.
I don't need this. I don't want to know a dang thing about it until whenever I sit down on my TV, probably 8 a.m. on Halloween because I'm going to take the day off so I can watch all of Stranger Things. But
as you
right,
should.
As I should. I'm National generally holiday. Kind of against this whole idea. Here's the thing. I've seen people reaction.
You're against the whole idea of season two? Or
I've
trailers?
Seen the people's reaction to the trailer. I'm sure it's fantastic. I'm sure it would make me excited. I think the Duffer brothers are going to do it right, especially because I feel like this season they could have pushed it out and made it a little bit quicker, but it seems like they took their time a little bit. But this better be good because the season one can stand alone as a miniseries for the ages. And it doesn't, I'm afraid that we've demanded too much of a good thing.
Yeah. We don't want a True Detective season two on our hands.
Right. Right.
But once again, is Sean Levy and the Duffer brothers doing it? It's not like Cary Fukunaga did True Detective season one. And then gosh, I don't even know who did True Detective season two, but I mean, so it is the same people. It's the same cast. I have no reason to suspect that they. I think they realize how big of a hit they have, and I think a lot of people would take that and go, "Okay, well, they're just going to churn it out." I think they see that as people of this cinema culture and go, "We have something special. We need to." Really make it worthy of a sequel or make the sequel worthy of the original. And so I don't know. I'm thinking this season's going to be even better than the first.
The trailer, because the trailer's definitely amazing. Like it's a really good trailer. Yeah. I'm hesitant just like Trevor, because like he said, this doesn't need to exist. Like season one was so good and a perfect arc that, even the ending felt a little forced. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but like the setup for season two felt a little
also,
forced,
if you haven't seen Stranger Things, stop listening
to
this
podcast.
It's such
a rich direction to
go
take
watch
it.
Stranger Things. It's much better than this podcast.
Yes. But I will say one thing that...
Whoa.
No, it's true. It's true.
That's fair.
One thing that does have me a little hesitant is this is going to sound like super name droppy, and I apologize. But I was at a conference in December where one of the speakers was the writer for Stranger Things. And she was talking about how they were in pre-production for season two and how excited they were, but also how nervous they were because of, first off, how big of a hit the first season was, but also because it wasn't thought of as a series. You know, they couldn't believe that they got the first season picked up. And then with the response of season one, like, yeah, the Duffer brothers had ideas, but I don't know. It wasn't like a thought out process, and I'm sure they're going to do a great job, but you know, it has me a little worried, but it's an amazing trailer. So I'm in.
Yeah. But I think we're all not even talking about the story in this series is great, but the story's nothing without the amazing cast, and the cast is back. Like, That's what brings me back is the fact that we have all these people coming back. You have David Harbour coming back. You have Winona Ryder coming back. You have all the kids. You have Bobby Millie Brown coming back. Millie Bobby Brown, whatever her name is. I mean, that's the part that gets me hopeful is that we do have this cast that we're attached to coming back. It's not just like picking up and being like, well, Eleven's in a new town. She's in New York City now, and let's see what she does here. It's that same cast that we've already fallen in love with. And so there's no needing to ramp up in the season. They can hit the ground running and just go.
Yeah. Good point.
But yeah, so that's Stranger Things season two. The only other thing we're going to talk about from Comic-Con, and there's so much news and there's so many websites that covered it. But the other thing that we want to talk about is the thing that I'm most excited about coming out of Comic-Con, which is the trailer from Ready Player One. Did everybody watch this?
Yep.
Okay, either of you guys read the book Ready Player One?
So, controversial statement. I tried to listen to it on audiobook and just like couldn't do it. Probably because it was audiobook. Ooh. But I kind of hated it. So, and it wasn't like the subject matter that I hated. It was just the audiobook experience. I don't know. But great trailer. I'm excited.
Yeah. The use of the Willy Wonka come with me, but like synthesized in the background is amazing. Like, oh my gosh. And the fact that they got Rush to play at the end of it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. So it's Spielberg. It's 80s nerd culture. It's. It has great music. It's. I feel like this movie is made for me. Like, I'm so stinking excited that one of my favorite directors of all time is directing a book that I love and hold dear. And I mean, this is one of a few books that I've read multiple times. Like, I don't even think I've read the Harry Potter books multiple times. And I love those books. Like, books for me are like, I can't read them multiple times. And this is going to sound super idiotic of me, but I can't read books multiple times because my brain goes faster than how fast I can read. I'm not a very fast reader. And then I just want to get to the parts that I remember. And movies move at a pace where it's like, okay, well, it's like 5 minutes away. But me reading, it's like an hour away of me reading. Like, I just want to get there. And so it's hard for me to read books multiple times. But this book is just so dense in pop culture. And I think it's exciting to see that they're not holding back. And even the trailer just has like Easter egg after Easter egg after Easter egg. And it's, oh, so excited.
I am a little worried about the lead actor because I just watched X-Men Apocalypse, unfortunately, and that's my only experience with him, and that movie's horrible. Like, he's not bad in but he's not good either.
Go watch Mud, the Jeff Nichols film, or Joe Nichols? What is it? I thought it was Jeff Nichols.
I've also had it on my Netflix list forever and just haven't gotten around to it. I've heard great things about it. So if he's in that, then
that's
the
start of the McConaissance.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the start of the McConaissance. And it was, gosh, I want to say it was Ty Sheridan's first film. And it's fantastic. And he shows off a range that I think many kids don't have. And I hope that he still has that because he's going to need that if he's pulling off the end of this movie.
Cool.
Trevor, we haven't heard anything from you on Ready Player One. Where are you at?
I'm sort of familiar with the source material. I've never read the book. I'd be interested to read the book. I think the trailer looks fun. I think it looks pretty cool. It's like Spielberg made Tron 30 years later. I'm cool with it. I definitely want to see it. Don't have any experience with Ty Sheridan. So that's whatever I guess. I know that there are people that really like him a lot. I think it's gonna be good. I was gonna say that Spielberg movies can only be so bad, but I watched Indiana Jones 4 for the first time the other night, and it is awful. It is truly terrible.
Yeah, so is War Horse.
Yeah, War Horse
doesn't even
bad.
Look good at all.
1941 isn't great. That's his attempt at like a war comedy.
I know that you
film,
guys don't like, Jurassic serious, Park: The Lost World, but I like it.
It's fine.
I like Lost World.
It's fine.
It's not nearly
well,
as good.
Of course
as the
not, but
original.
It's awesome. It's got Jeff Goldblum just ranting on screen for hours. It's my favorite thing.
And it's got Vince Vaughn, so we got that waiting for us. But that's all we have for Comic-Con. We are going to move on to a brand new segment that I'm really excited about. I think this is going to be a fun little segment to continue as we go throughout the decades of this podcast. But let's get on to our new section, Honorable Mensches. Now, for those of you who don't know, mensch is a word. It's an old Yiddish term for a good or honorable man. And it's a word that kind of came around because Michael Gary Scott used it. If you guys aren't familiar with Mr. Scott's work, I would recommend seasons 1 through 7 of The Office. But we are calling this Honorable Mensches because this is going to be a segment where we all put somebody up for vote. And the person that we're putting up is somebody who has been in or worked on more than 5 films. And the whole big thing behind this is, does this person, if you knew nothing else about this movie other than this person was involved with it, is that enough for you to go see it? So when you think of like, this person's directing it, I don't need to see a trailer, I don't need to see promotional, I don't even need to know what it's about, that person's in it, I'm automatically going to go see it because of that person. So our honorable mentions are people that I'm calling the blind test, just in like, I don't need to know anything about this movie other than this person's involved and I'm in. In order to, for somebody to be an honorable mensch, they have to get a unanimous vote from all of us. So if one of us is like, man, I really, really love the work of Dax Shepard. Great.
Veto.
Revolutionary.
Veto.
And then Jake goes veto, then it's odd, like Trevor doesn't even have a say. It's out. It's not up for consideration. You can bring them up again later.
Dax
but these
Shepard.
Are just people that does,
what a good like example of someone that does not belong in this category.
Great in Parenthood though. Love Parenthood.
Yeah. Dax Shepard would be on our unmentionable list. We don't mention him. He's unmentioned.
Just to clarify really quick, so, it's honorable menches, not honorable mentions. Like this isn't, and the honorable mentions are things that don't quite make our top 10. So just to clarify, it's a good
so
Yiddish
menches,
man.
So menches, M-E-N-S-C-H. It's a Yiddish word. It's like
you're a real mensch,
Dwight.
The way
I heard about it.
You're a real mensch, Dwight.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that's how I found out about it. And I think it's perfect for this use. I'm glad that it finally has a use other than me just calling my friends menches and them getting annoyed a bit. But let's go ahead and get to our nominees for the first honorary class of mensches. So, Jake, who is your first nominee as an honorable mention?
All right. This is a man who has been in a lot of films. Many, many incredible films. A few bad films, as most actors have been. He has been... a staple in pop culture and is having a bit of a renaissance, a moment right now, if you will. I bring to the table Harrison Ford.
Oh.
Ooh.
See, I just watched Indiana Jones 4.
Yeah, I know. When you said that, I was like,
the question is, does he... The question isn't, is he batting 1,000? The question is... is he enough to pull you to the theater?
I think...
like, is him alone enough?
I think for a lot of people, he is. Like, he's one of the biggest movie stars of all time.
Yeah, I don't... it's hard for me. I would say maybe yes. It's tough for me.
Trevor, go ahead.
Extraordinary Measures looks like the worst movie of all time. I haven't even seen it, but the trailers were so bad, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I love Harrison Ford, but I don't know. Here's where I'm struggling. So
you can say no.
Harrison
you
Ford
can just
his,
say no. I mean,
yeah, I'm gonna say
yeah,
no.
This is hard for me to do, but I'm gonna say no. Also.
Wow.
Look, this list needs to be
exclusive.
These are like, yeah, this is a very hard list to get onto, and. As much as I love Harrison Ford, if it was a Liam Neeson-esque movie, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, with Harrison Ford, I don't know if I'm sitting here going, man, I'm pumped just because Harrison Ford's in that. I don't know if he's got the gravitas to bring me to a theater, him alone.
Okay. Now I know the scale to weigh it on.
You know the scale.
Okay.
You better mensch up.
Okay, hold on now. You calm
down. Whoa.
this is gonna get awkward. Trevor. But Jake, great pick. I think we can all agree that Harrison Ford is a legend. We all love him.
He's
a great actor.
He may be an American treasure, but he is not an honorable.
Oh, there we go. Well put.
He's not an honorable mensch. There we go. All righty. Trevor, your
okay,
first
these...
nominee.
Wait, hold on. Quick question. Do they have to be Jewish?
Yeah.
Is that what's wrong with Harrison Ford?
Of the mensch does not play into it.
Okay. Just making sure that we're not racist. Okay, Trevor, go on.
I will say, like, we may be talking Harrison Ford again come October, November when Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, man, so I know. So awesome. Okay, so are we... Yeah. Wait, how many nominees right, are we each giving?
One.
Okay.
We're just doing
okay,
one
that's
tonight.
What I thought.
I'm just saying first because it's the first time that we're doing it. I'm not like, you're first right, of the right. night. I'm, this is just the first council of
I'm
going to
do
mentions.
One that's... Well, I wanted to talk about Nolan, but it's too on the nose. We're going to talk enough about him.
I'm surprised that nobody's talking about Nolan. Like, I was for sure Jake's
we'll,
doing
we'll
Nolan
save
tonight.
Him for yeah. a podcast where we're not talking about him for 75% of the time. I'm going okay. to nominate two people because they work together, and it is the Coen oh. brothers. They have directed every type of film. They've directed comedies. They've directed Westerns. They've directed whatever O Brother, Where Art Thou is. Classical Greek remake? I don't know. Whatever. what, I mean, Raising Arizona, Fargo, Murder Mystery. These guys are awesome. I haven't seen all of their movies.
Musical.
But if I find out the Coen brothers... wrote, directed what's coming out, I'll go see it no matter what it's about, no matter what the trailer looks like.
Yeah. Inside Ewan Davis is flat out amazing. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I like the Coen brothers a lot, and I think the Coen brothers are working at a level where I get excited about things no matter what they're doing. Like, they have a new TV show coming out that they're directing every episode of, and I honestly haven't looked that much into it, but I'm excited about it just because they're directing it. So I would say yes. I would say yes to the Coen brothers.
Hmm.
Jake, where are we at?
I mean, I agree with Trevor on what you said, and also I, like you, Trevor, have unfortunately not seen all of their work, but everything of theirs that I have seen, I have thoroughly enjoyed. And really the only directing duo they're less than is the Wachowskis. So that was a joke. That was definitely a joke.
I paused because I was like, wait, where's he going with this?
No.
Did he watch Speed Racer and now thinks that they're visionaries? Like,
I unfortunately saw Jupiter Ascending.
Oh man.
No, but
So opposite direction.
Yes. But no, Coen brothers, if they make something, I'm in, just like you said, Cameron. So yeah, I'd say yes. Coen brothers are in. They are the first honorable mentions, and they're Jewish.
Oh, what?
I just want to say this once again. This list has nothing to do with religion or
I forgot to
cultures.
Mention they've it's also just, done rom-com. Intolerable Cruelty is pretty good too.
Yeah, yeah. So wow, Trevor, great first pick. I had a list of people because I was ready for any number of my nominees to get taken, and I thought that they would get taken. But the person who's at the top of my list is a man who we've talked about on this podcast before. He's a great director. I think when we look back on movies in 20 years, when this director is done directing, I think we will look at him as the greatest director of all time. And that man is Steven Spielberg. So the question now comes to the table of, is Spielberg enough to bring you to the theater?
Yeah. Duh. Put him in. Also Jewish. Double Jew. Let's go.
I say yes, and I'm going to ignore that I knew War Horse was going to be terrible the first time I saw a trailer.
But you still went to go see the movie anyways because Spielberg.
I didn't see it actually. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
But yes, mind. I'll say
every director has a bad movie.
Yeah, I'll say yes. Well, I'll say I'm unfairly biased towards horse movies. I don't like them.
Same.
Spirit.
Why do
you
they
didn't
exist?
Like Spirit?
Yeah, Hidalgo, Seabiscuit. No, none of that. I don't need that. It doesn't even know if it won or lost. Why do we care whether it races or not?
Yeah.
So, but yes, yeah, Spielberg is great. Are you kidding me? We've talked about Saving Private Ryan being like the definitive war movie of all war movies. Jaws is a classic. Jurassic Park is a classic. I mean,
Minority Report, one of his lesser movies. Minority Report is a classic.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is the gold standard of adventure movies and will probably never be equaled.
Yep.
He's literally changed
Lincoln
the game.
Lincoln is one of the greatest historical films.
Yeah.
Jake, which film?
I was going to say he's literally changed the game. Like he has defined Hollywood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he inspired a generation. And we could sit here and talk his filmography for hours. Because he's just done
his
so
ability
much.
To tell a story on a huge scale while also getting great performances from his actors consistently is unrivaled.
Yeah. And we're not even mentioning the fact that he's what I want to say he's 70 and he's still churning out multiple films a year. Like he has the Papers coming out later this year for, of course, prime Oscar placement. And then he has Ready Player One coming out in March. So within 3 months, he's churning out two movies. And I mean, the guy's just a legend. I can't think of anybody else that I would want to nominate for this first time. So congrats to the Coen brothers and Steven Spielberg as part of the first class of inductees into the class of honorable mentions. So that's honorable mentions, and we'll probably bring that back because that was kind of fun. Yeah. I had a good time doing that. So that's honorable mentions. Before we get to our review of Dunkirk, Jake wants to have a little time to talk to our audience about a growing issue that he sees. Jake, what is this issue?
Well, welcome to a new little segment we call Jake's Rants and Raves. man, I am just so annoyed with the Discovery Channel. And if you haven't seen Michael Phelps raced a great white shark. Oh, but he didn't because they marketed up like Michael Phelps, the greatest of all time versus a great white shark. Who's going to win? Great white shark. Duh. But he doesn't even race against a great white shark. Like if you're going to market against a great white shark, then put him in a shark cage swimming lane and let him go against a great white shark, Discovery Channel. Don't put a computer generated great white shark behind Michael Phelps. Like we don't know that it's a computer generated shark. It's 2017, y'all. We know it's a computer generated shark. Everybody knows, especially with the dumb little flop jump thing it does at the end to like signify, oh, I won. Sharks don't do that. So just stop it. And this is like the third year in a row that they've done this stupid gimmick. Is the Megalodon real? Yeah, a million years ago, it's dead. We all know it's dead. If it was alive, we would have seen it because it's the size of a submarine. Okay, so I just don't understand what they're doing because, well, I do understand. Discovery Channel is fake news. That's what it is because they are literally being fake news by being like, is this real? I don't know. You have to watch to find out. Oh, it's not. Okay, stop being BuzzFeed. You are an educational entertainment staple in the United States of America. Shark Week was my childhood. I love sharks. Now, I don't like sharks very much anymore because of Discovery Channel. I still like sharks, but I hate this stupid shark content, and you need to stop it. Okay. Trevor, are you back from the bathroom?
I just got back. That was perfect timing.
Okay.
So, I like honorable mentions, but Jake's ranting is maybe my new favorite segment.
We'll keep it.
So, Jake, find more things for us to, or for you to rant about because that was pretty great.
Okay.
Not to mention the fact that, I mean, Michael, the CGI of the Great White is terrible.
Yeah. Just give me a couple minutes a week and I'll find something to write my frustration about.
They should have got the people that did Planet of the Apes to do the shark.
And Andy Serkis
as a great white.
Oh, I looked up the Shucks, Benedict Cumberbatch dragon motion capture video, and it's amazing.
It is.
Oh, it's so good. It's incredible, and it's even better when you realize that they didn't actually use anything that he did. They just wanted to see what he brought to the performance, and then they completely just scrapped it and did their own thing.
Poor guy.
Like, I love Cumberbatch. I think he's one of the better actors working in Hollywood today, but gosh, that's, I mean, the dude commits. I'll give him that much, but that it's just, it's, It's painful. It's painful. Mainly because those movies are just terrible. But Jake just ranted, so I'm not going to rant about The Hobbit. Let's go ahead and get into our review of Dunkirk. Now, I think we can all agree that if we had two picks for honorable mentions, Christopher Nolan probably would have gotten nominated tonight because he's a fantastic director. And with Dunkirk, he's crafted a war film. I'm going to read the synopsis off of IMDb. Allied soldiers from Belgium, the British Empire, and France are surrounded by the German army and evacuated during a fierce battle in World War II. This is an amazing cast. This is an amazing true story that I would encourage people to look into. But Jake, what are your just general thoughts on Dunkirk?
So this movie is basically just a survival film in the disguise of a war film. There's a lot I like about it and a lot of frustration that I have with it, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit. But like overall, this is a incredible achievement in filmmaking, especially technically, that really pulled me in and was a powerful film. Definitely not Nolan's best film, but I think you could say it's Nolan's masterpiece because it's the most Nolan-y film he's ever made, and that's either a good thing or a bad thing depending on who you are. For me, it kind of got in the way of the story because Nolan seems to have an obsession with how to tell a story instead of just the actual story itself sometimes. But that being said, this is definitely a powerful film that is a great theater experience. Like, if you're gonna see this movie, you have to see it in the theater. So I enjoyed it, but I have a lot of frustrations with it.
Amazing story. It's an amazing film experience. That's just what Jake was saying was what I have written down. It's a perfect theater experience. It takes you into it. It shows you a spectacle on a grand scale. It takes you out of whatever you were thinking about or whatever you're doing before the movie. It hits you on all of the emotions. There's some legitimate times where I had real goosebumps all over my body and tears in my eyes. There are some issues with this film, I guess. I've read them that some people have. I think that this film is exactly what Nolan wanted it to be. I think that its shortcomings as far as maybe being a truly great film or whatever, I don't really mind some of the things that are missing, like character development, that kind of stuff that I'm sure we'll get into. because it works.
I don't mind that the characters aren't developed.
It's not
whatsoever.
This isn't a movie about characters. This is a movie about an event, and the characters just show the event. It's almost an experimental film in some ways because it's a strangely construed narrative. Your lead actors, your famous faces, aren't even necessarily your lead characters in a lot of ways. But anyway, before we get too far off, just overall thoughts. I thought this was amazing. Go see it on the big screen. You have to see it on the big screen. I'm not sure if it will play as well on your TV. But it's a truly a masterpiece of filmmaking, like Jake said, and really a breathtaking achievement.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think Nolan has an eye for how to tell a story visually. And I think what better way to do that than a war film where there's so many soldiers that are shell-shocked and don't want to say anything. And it's more about their actions and body motion. And so I think in that regard, Nolan did a fantastic job. It's funny, Trevor, that you mentioned how this movie, you felt it was emotional, because I felt that this film was insanely emotionally detached and, for lack of a better word, shallow. I mean, a common complaint with Christopher Nolan films is that He takes pacing and story so seriously that he forgets to give you the emotions that you want in a scene. Like when Rachel dies, spoiler, in The Dark Knight, it's been out for 9 years now. So if you haven't seen it, whatever, go see it. And Rachel dies. When she dies, you're not as, you don't get, I thought about this week, and this is the first time I'd actually thought about this, was I'm not, like, I don't feel anything from that. I'm more just interested in where the story's going. I'm not like, oh my gosh, what a sad scene. Like, I'm heartbroken for Bruce. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Let's go. Whatever. Yeah. And I've never had a problem with that. I've never been like, man, the emotionally detached scenes in his film always take me out of it, because I think his pacing and his storytelling is so beyond what anybody else is doing nowadays that I haven't been concerned. And for the record, I thought Interstellar was an incredibly emotional film. And I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. Like, I cried pretty big. I cried a lot during the first time that I saw Interstellar. And I think that he has emotions in his film, and they just don't always connect with certain people. But this is the first time that I found a Nolan film, like, very in your face detached. And it frustrates me because, like, in my head I'm going, like, if there were literally 3 minutes of scenes added on screen, you would have been so much more emotionally attached to any number of characters, just to give some sort of background or some sort of intrigue into who these people are. And that's not to say I didn't like it, but it just wasn't, like, the best war films are the war films that make you feel the pain, suffering, energy, lack of energy, whatever you want, in those movies. And I feel like without that emotional connection to any character, I didn't feel that. Like, we talked about the greatest war film of all time, Saving Private Ryan, and, like, the end of that movie, like, you're emotionally wrecked. The beginning of that movie, you're distraught at the horrors of war. And I don't know if I ever got to that point. And I get that it's not fair to compare this movie to a masterpiece that is Saving Private Ryan, but there are many people that have gone on to say this is one of the best war films of all time. And so if we're going to put it in that category, I'm going to compare the two. And I don't know. It's a solid movie, but I'm wrestling with, like, so I'm wrestling with the thought of, like, okay, so it's a great movie, but at what cost to the characters? Because I think one of the best parts of this movie is the cast. Like, the cast in this movie is insane. Mark Rylance, Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy's okay. But the best of the people in this cast are the young actors, the young unknowns, Fionn Whitehead, Jack Loudon, Barry Keoghan,
Harry Styles was awesome.
Even Harry Styles, I thought, did a...
Yeah, he was fine.
He was fantastic. Like, I was like, I'm game for Harry Styles having an acting career after this movie.
Yeah.
He had, like, charisma and pop on screen, and I was like, cool, I'm in. Let's talk cast a little bit. What were some of the standouts in the cast for you guys?
Poor Tom Hardy just can't get a role in a Nolan film where he gets to use his mouth anymore. I feel bad for him, but just like he did with Bane, weird voice aside, he delivers the performance with his eyes and his body movements. I thought he was fantastic. You see everything you need to see about the character in his eyes the whole time. I thought he was fantastic. You guys know I love Kenneth Branagh. Kenneth Branagh is great. He plays someone in charge like nobody else. That's just what he does.
Gilderoy Lockhart.
I thought James Darcy was fantastic also.
What an underused actor in
movie. He was great. I mean, the cast was great. I found out that Christopher Nolan didn't know who Harry Styles was when he cast him. Did you guys know that?
Yeah,
he was just like,
which is great. Yeah.
He was just in a giant casting call. He found out from his daughters. Won the part like everybody else, which is hilarious. But that's the only way it could have worked in a movie.
That
like
makes
this.
Me have so much more respect for Harry Styles.
Yeah,
this isn't the kind of movie where a pop star just shows up for publicity, you know. So, but yeah, I love the cast.
I think it says something that I was more thrown off when Cillian Murphy showed up than I was when Harry Styles.
Yeah, I get that.
Jake, who was the standout in the cast for you?
I mean, everybody that was in this film is a phenomenal actor, and they brought everything they could to this film. The problem I have with this film, like you said, Cameron, is like this script is like probably like 40 pages. There's just not a lot for these characters to do. That's not physical, and by physical I mean like trying not to die. and so you just don't, I don't know, like these characters felt more, as a lot of Nolan's characters do, these especially felt like metaphors, like living metaphors. Yeah. You have the admiral representing the sea, you have the pilot Hardy representing the air, you have the soldiers representing the beaches, and then you have Churchill's speech at the end, like, we'll take them by the air and we'll take them by the sea. And they're cutting to each of those people. And you have the man who stands up for his brother and the lead. And then you have the like selfish guy and Tom Hardy and the coward and the French. And it's just like each person is essentially just playing a singular
what this is
role in.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was basically done. I was just like, everyone did a great job, but I just don't feel like anybody really had a lot to do.
Yeah, what this film is it's like the best possible version of one of those History Channel docudramas they run over and over again. It just doesn't have the narration in between.
Yeah.
But the best version of that History Channel docudrama, I don't know if is still a great movie. Like that's my problem is that.
Agreed.
It's good for what it is, but
that's why I say that it's almost like an experimental kind of film. This is, I think it's exactly what Nolan wanted it to be, which says something about a filmmaker when they can make exactly the film that they want to make.
It is.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan's at a point in his career when he can do whatever the heck he wants, yeah, and studios will fund it.
It is like a weird blend of like documentary and cinema.
See, I know you guys were talking about, you guys have talked about character development and everything. The little dialogue, like in this case, works for me. The whole thing worked for me. I think that the lack of dialogue is itself the story in a lot of ways. I think that it's impressive that you can make a film this engaging with such a short script with such bare bones.
I don't think it's engaging. Like, I hate to keep hitting the same point. I don't think it's engaging because of the way that we connect to characters. I think it's engaging because of the story, which is great. Like, it's an engaging story, but I just keep thinking like, okay, let's make this movie instead of 147 or whatever it was. Yeah, it's 147. Instead of 147, let's make it 155 at an 8 minutes of like a little bit of emotional attachment for Tom Hardy's character, or for Fionn Whitehead's character, or a scene between Fionn Whitehead, who plays Tommy, the main guy in the mole land scenes, between him and spoiler. Let's go ahead and get into the spoiler. If you haven't seen this movie, go see it. It's worth seeing. Like, go see it on the biggest screen possible. Go see it on IMAX. Look up 70mm IMAX and go see this film on it. But spoiler, if they had built up scenes between Tommy and the Frenchman, Gibson, I think is his name. When Gibson dies, or when Fionn, or when Tommy stands up for him, that would have been so much more emotionally impactful. And like, we would have felt that. And like the horrors of like, look, you're not like the simple difference of like, look, you're a human. You look like us. You act like us. You're a soldier, but you're French. You're not English. That's enough for us to want to kill you and surrender you to the Germans. Like that, the horrors of that is lost on me because I don't care about any of the characters because they've just been there. They haven't done anything. Like, make me feel the horrors and the like, how hard and grueling and terrifying this is, because then the end of this movie is fantastic. But it would be so much better if we had actually felt what had come before it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that in that area, I think that the filmmaker is relying on maybe the viewer's knowledge of, like, a background knowledge of World War II in a lot of ways. I think that, like, you almost, to fully get the effect of this film, you almost had to, like, do the reading before class, you know, to really kind of contextualize everything, which is maybe not the best thing to assume about your audience, but I guess it's better than assuming that we're really dumb.
Yeah.
But okay, so Trevor, let me ask you this. If I was to show you The Dark Knight and didn't give you any explanation of Batman Begins, like Batman as a character, would you still think The Dark Knight's a good movie?
Yeah, probably so.
So, I mean, and that's my point, is like, you shouldn't need contextualization in order for a movie sure. to be great. Like, I think that's where so many books turn to movies fail, is that they make you feel like you have to have read them and know everything about them before getting there. And I think that's where Harry Potter succeeded in such amazing ways, that there's little Easter eggs for those of us that read the books, but they're also incredibly easy to understand if you haven't read the books. But I get your point of, like, you need to have done the reading before, but it just, like, that shouldn't have to be the case. And I get that it's like, I feel like I'm ranting about how much I dislike this movie. When
I feel like in some ways, I mean, I don't know if this is the case, but I think the length of this film may be like a reaction to Interstellar and how the perception was that it was a good film that was too long. I feel like, so I don't know if that played into this at all and what Nolan wanted to do and everything, because I know the original script was short anyway, and he wrote it like 20 years ago or whatever. But that's kind of something I was thinking about when I thought about this film. If the reaction to Interstellar played any role in how he decided to do this.
Yeah. I have a few complaints, but before we turn this into just the negative Nancy train, there is one thing I do want to talk about, is the cinematography of this film is insane.
Yes.
Like, this puts you right into the intensity of war with an IMAX perspective. And like you said, Cameron, Christopher Nolan is one of the best action for cinema directors, because action on the big screen is so different than action on the small screen. And a lot of directors don't understand that. Like, nothing is lost. Even when watching it on a giant screen with a ton of action happening, you pick up every single thing that's happening. Because it's so simple. It's just like a few characters, a piece of action, solid composition, and that's it. There's not a thousand different, like, CGI effects happening. One thing that frustrates me, though, with, I mean, this is the scale of IMAX, 70 millimeter. I felt like Nolan missed the scale of this story. Like, 300,000 soldiers were saved by 700 civilian boats. And the most we see on screen is like 40 people and 10 boats at a time. Like the 5 minute long take, or the 5 minute long one take in Atonement did a better job at showing the scale of Dunkirk better than this. And then the counter argument to that is, well, this is a perspective of these soldiers. No, we had everyone's perspective, soldiers, pilots, admirals, civilians, and not enough time with anyone to care about their specific perspective. So if you aren't going to pick a perspective, instead give us the entire picture of the experience. Like when the admiral was like, got teary-eyed and said, home, and then they cut to the boats, I was expecting to see a fleet of ships, and instead it was like 12 boats. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
And then they're like, we got 300,000 men back.
Yeah.
And it's like,
how?
I
understand.
I thought we were at like the 30,000 point. And he's like, we're going to get more. Yeah.
I understand those issues, but that all worked for me. I didn't have any problems at all. That got me emotional. I think the most emotionally stirring to go off of that is when there's that battleship of downtrodden soldiers, and then they pass all of the civilian boats in the water, yeah, and they start cheering.
That was a great shot.
I had like goosebumps, yeah, head to toe. I had tears in my eyes. Like, I think that something that this film does is it shows, without character development, it shows that war brings out the best in some people and the worst in other people. And that can sometimes happen, yeah, to people within a span of hours or minutes. And I think that that's kind of where the emotion comes from, kind of those bigger ideas and not from the smaller character moments.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think, Trevor, that's a good point, is that like, and this movie does this part very well, is that like, war shows your true colors. Like, are you, once again, spoilers, we're in spoilers, so please get out if you haven't seen this movie. Are you going to be the Harry Styles who's like, turns and is like, we're going to kill you? Or are you going to be the Jack Loudon, who is Tom Hardy's co-pilot, who's like, yeah, I'm not just going to go down. I'm going to try and bait this guy so that we can kill this pilot and get this other plane out of the sky. Which soldier are you? Which person are you? Are you the Mark Rylance or the Barry Keoghan, who plays George, who dies in the boat? Are you those guys who are like, I'm a civilian, I don't know anything about this, all I know is like, there are men over there who need help, I'm gonna go help them. And that's like, that's the part of the movie that, gosh, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I wish this movie had just been like Mark Rylance in a boat going to save
people.
I would
watch that movie, yes.
Okay, so we have to talk about the editing and like the perspectives in this, because is Nolan's, yeah, biggest middle finger to time ever.
Oh yeah. oh yeah.
Yeah.
The non-linear structure in this manipulates each perspective, and it creates a sense of urgency and coexistence that probably would not have been created from a linear editing structure. Like, events are melding together into one single world, as they probably would feel like if you're a soldier in war. But I mean, was it the right call? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel necessary. It makes it more complicated than it needs to be. This isn't a film about a dream within a dream, or like time being changed by gravity. This is an actual historical event in World War II, and I didn't really like recognize what was happening until they kept cutting to the pilots in daytime and the soldiers on the beach at nighttime, and then back to the like guys on the boat in daytime. And I was like, what the heck is going on? And we're like seeing redundant sequences from different perspectives. And like, I get it. I get what he's doing and it works, but at the same time, it doesn't. Like, it takes me out of the experience. Like, this was an actual historical event. It could have just been a linear structure, but at the same time, it's Nolan, and he's one of the best filmmakers at all time, and he made it work somehow. So I'm very frustrated by it.
I don't think it added anything to the movie. Let me say that. Like, I think about that part of the film, and I'm like, did him editing it that way add anything to make the film better? And I don't think it did. Like, I can't think of a moment where I'm like, man, the way that those things lined up, because they were told non-linearly, made this even better. Like, there's nothing about the non-linear storytelling that made the movie better.
Yeah. Trevor,
what are your thoughts on
that? I don't know that it made it better. I think the movie might have been just as good done a different way. I think that it does add, I think it adds some urgency to, say, this, like, the scenes, or it gives you more of like the fighter pilots and more of the civilian boats, because I mean, if you tell the story linearly, they don't come in until the third act. And this whole movie is basically a third act for a story that is told in the first, like on the first title screen. But what makes the structure work and ties everything together is these tiny little hints and glimpses that you're given of something that you've already seen or something that you're about to see. Like when you can kind of barely see the minesweeper ship that Tommy ends up on, kind of out of the corner of the plane shots, and you can kind of see these things coming together. And I think that it's these little bits that kind of bring the familiarity together in your brain, so you're not totally confused.
Yeah, I just feel like the nonlinear editing hurt the character development and our emotional attachment, because like if we had spent the first act with just the soldiers and then the second act is the civilian ships get the call and now we're with the soldiers and with the civilians, and then the final act is everything's going to hell and the pilots show up, and like that is the rah-rah, yes, like the day is saved moment, and all the boats are arriving on the beach, and like this, like I feel like that would have had a more typical structure, obviously, but also like a more emotional payoff. There's nothing, like Cameron said, I don't understand the benefit of the nonlinear structure besides making it one giant third act, which it didn't need to be.
Well, you don't pay Tom Hardy for the third act of a movie.
Fair point.
So,
yeah, okay. So, I mean, so here's a question I have. And Jake, for those of our audience who don't know, Jake was in the ROTC, right?
Yep.
You were in the Air Force ROTC, right?
Yep.
And Jake has family who's still serving in the Air Force. And so maybe Jake can clear this up for me.
Okay.
But why?
I'm nervous now.
And if you can't, no pressure. But it's a big question that I have.
Okay.
That I feel like there's an explanation for, but I can't think of it, and I couldn't find anything on it.
Okay.
Why does Tom Hardy land the plane way down the beach in the German zone instead of sending the plane out to sea or something, parachuting up and landing down on the British beach?
I don't know exactly why he didn't do that. Like, I know, I'm assuming it's because he was out of gas, and like once he'd established a clean landing line, it was too much of a risk to adjust that, and then he might have died. So that's probably what it was. I think he also didn't know where the Germans were specifically. But when he landed, he destroyed his plane, because that's what made the British Air Force so successful, was the Spitfire that the Germans weren't able to recreate. So I'm assuming it's just because he already had a clean landing line with no gas.
And it looked
okay. That's fair. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just,
yeah,
I was like, maybe Jake knows this, because I was like, that seemed like such a misstep in a otherwise very
well,
logically told story.
Let's make this clear. This entire thing is about the biggest military disaster like of our time.
Right. Just a total domination, yeah, by the enemy.
Yeah.
Which, well, okay, let's get to the ending of this movie.
To kind of add on to what Jake was saying about that, it looked to me like he kind of, you know, he opened his cockpit and it looked like he was about to eject, but it looked to me like it was sort of like a morale boost thing. Like he knew everyone was cheering because they saw a British ship flying by. And I think that that's kind of when he decided like landing this ship is a lot more important for everyone's morale than ejecting out and letting the ship just crash. I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but that's kind of what I took from it.
I think that's a fair assessment.
I will say,
yeah, I think that's totally fair. I'm completely open to any interpretation of that. I was just wildly confused as to why. And I was like, look, there are smarter people out there other than me that understand this.
Also,
two of them happen to be on this podcast with me, so I'll have them explain it to me.
Seeing a plane fly by without its propeller turning is like super badass.
Dude, that shot where it was like the juxtaposition,
oh my goodness,
of him and the plane with no prop, like on the city with the smoke, that's one of the best shots of the year. Which this film needs a cinematography and sound design Oscar nod. I mean, like,
yep,
incredible. Yeah. The fact that they were able to do
those aerial sequences
with IMAX cameras, insane.
I don't see how it doesn't win best cinematography. Yeah. I mean, it...
Oh, dude, Blade Runner.
Okay, you're
right. Roger Deakins.
You're right, we've got Deakins.
Roger Deakins.
Jake, that was my other pick that I was like, Jake's going to put Deacon.
You're right.
Honorable
I forgot.
Mentions.
That's coming.
I forgot.
That's
with,
coming.
With Deacon's and Villanueva doing that.
Oh, yeah. No, but this will definitely get a nod.
Yeah. And I mean, still, like, I'm still so interested as to what Wally Pfister is doing with his career. Like, for those of you who don't know, Wally Pfister was Christopher Nolan's DP for, gosh, up until...
Interstellar.
Yeah, until Interstellar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Hoyt Van Hoytma ended up being the cinematographer, who's an amazing cinematographer. Wally Pfister went on to direct Transcendence with Paul Bettany. There's that other guy who normally has white paint on his face. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That
in computer
guy, that
form.
Guy, who plays a computerized version of himself. Yeah. And we haven't heard from him since. And it's like, dude, you did amazing work as a cinematographer. Where are you? Like, did him and Nolan have that big of a falling out that he's like...
No, he wanted to direct and Nolan understood. So they're on good terms.
But it's been like 4 years since...
Yeah. I mean, you make a bad movie. Your first movie's bad. People aren't going to give you a second movie.
that's fair. Okay, but let's get to the ending, because this is one of my biggest problems of why the emotional detachment. Or, well, like, okay, let me just say this. So the end of the movie, Harry Styles and Fionn Whitehead, who their names are so, like, not mentioned in the movie that it's hard for me to remember, but Fionn Whitehead plays Tommy, Harry Styles plays Alex. We can just refer to them as their normal non-movie names. They're on the train back, and they're worried about how they're going to be disgraced soldiers who, like, forfeited on the beaches of Dunkirk. And that wasn't even a thought that had popped into my head until that moment. Like, if they had taken 30 seconds when they're all sitting in the boat talking or something, and they're like, man, when we go back, we're going to be disgraced. That would have just set it up so, like, and been like, had us thinking about, like, their emotions during this time. But instead, it's like, they mention it, and a second later, it's like, oh, yeah, you guys made it back. Thanks. You guys did so great. Here's a beer. Here's, like, biscuits. Enjoy. Yay. Thank you. And it's like, that, it didn't hit for me the way that I would hope for, or that I would expect that scene to hit. How did you guys feel about the ending in that moment?
So, okay. So for me, this is another big Nolan thing to do, is that, like, time, truth is relative. And so, like, before that, we have the blind volunteer, like, saying, good job, lads. And Alex says he wouldn't even look me in the eye. We have a passing soldier ask the airman, Collins, where he was during the rescue. And the dad or whatever says they know where you were. I mean, there's these constant, like Cillian Murphy makes sure George is okay. And the son, I think his name was Peter, lied to him and said it's okay. And, like, the lie is more important, because it's bending the truth. I mean, it's just like The Dark Knight. Sometimes the truth is what needs to be said, not what happened. And that is basically what Churchill's speech was. I found it ironic that the trailer for The Darkest Hour, starring Gary Oldman, where he gives that speech, played right before this movie started for me. They got their butts whooped by the Germans, and then he goes out and gives this speech about how we will continue to fight, we will never surrender, when they literally just surrendered. It's about what needs to be said. And so I think that's just something else that Nolan does, and that's what the end of this film was. I mean, it was, yes, they just survived, and that is just enough, and Tommy's able to handle that, and Alex isn't, but the country was told what they needed to hear. And so they're there to support their boys coming home from war. That's how I took it.
Yeah, I think it's...
No, and yeah, I get that about the ending, but it was more about, like, it just felt like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys, I guess. I will say, it never crossed my mind as well that they would be seen as cowards or anything. That kind of surprised me a little bit, that they would take it that way. I guess it's because I live in the United States, and we support our troops no matter what.
We kick
or
ass
whatever.
All the
That's
time.
Right. Come home safe, boys. And that was a Parks and Rec joke. So
I was wondering if that was the beautiful Parks and Rec.
You know what, y'all? I'll bring the beers, you bring the girls, and the troops will bring the
That's
freedom.
Right. That's right. But I think that this everything here at the end, except for really, I guess, Alex and Tommy, all of the other characters show an awareness of perspective, and that this is a battle, one battle in the scope of a giant war. Whereas I think Alex and Tommy are kind of the naive young characters who can't think past, I must survive, I must get home. But the other characters, we see this need. I mean, we see it in Churchill's speech, who's not really a character here, but the speech plays a role. And with whatever, Peter, is that the kid's name? This understanding of, you know, like there's the in a lot of ways the damage has been done, and we're all stuck in this together fighting against this incredibly powerful enemy who's hellbent on destroying all of us. So what's happened here doesn't matter now. We're at this point and we're going forward. And I think that you kind of see that urgency and that understanding in a lot of the characters at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's kind of all that I have on this movie. Do you guys have any other thoughts you want to quickly throw out there before we rate this
something
movie?
That I thought was a really interesting way that the story was told was that there, in every other war movie, we have like cutaways to someone at home or someone in a war room or generals or commanding officers. The only things that we hear are like people over the radio that we can kind of understand. And Michael Caine being on, having a sweet
that?
Cameo. I didn't realize it at the time, but once I read that it was him, I got it.
I didn't either. I was like, man, Michael Caine's in this movie.
I think that serves to keep you in the moment. I think that like a typical filmmaker might use that to build drama where like, you know, like, are we going to send boats? Are we going to send planes? Are we going to send the civilian boats? I don't know. Let's cut to like Michael Caine and Anthony Hopkins arguing in a war room somewhere, you know, like that kind of thing.
And some Transformers.
But I think that's not the story that Nolan wanted to tell here. And you don't need that. Just having them. I mean, there's a lot of things and that made this movie so efficient. And I would say ruthlessly efficient in some ways. That there's nothing extra here. And I thought that was an interesting thing that really worked for me. It kind of made this movie, this is a story of the people. It's not a story of the important ones or the generals. I know we have Kenneth Branagh as the commander there, but aside from that, it's really a story of the regular people. And I liked that.
Yeah, I agree. I have
Jake, closing thoughts.
I have two little things that I want us to talk about before I give my closing thoughts. They'll be pretty brief. One, did you guys see the US Today review of this movie?
No.
The writer spent a large majority of the time complaining about, one, the lack of diversity, and two, no women leads. So,
you know, I thought about that.
That person is an
idiot. I was thinking, you know, this is a very male cast. And then I was like, you know what? It was 1940 and it was a war. So that seems pretty accurate.
Like, freaking idiot. Okay. But also, what do we think about the future of Christopher Nolan?
A new section
Nolan?
Of Jake Raves.
Like, because this is a good movie, but it's not great. And there's definitely the Christopher Nolan bias of you expect greatness out of everything he makes. But like his last three films have not wowed me like how he usually has.
Yeah, I liked Interstellar a lot. We talked Dark Knight Rises and I voiced my opinion on how much I disliked that film. I think this is still a good movie. Like, I know I ripped on this film for 90% of this podcast. I still like this movie. I just don't think it's as great as everybody's hyping it up to be. I don't think it's his masterpiece. So I know he's working. He hasn't confirmed what he's doing next. I know he's talked about doing a Howard Hughes film for a while. I don't know. Like, I think he's still in the boat of people who, like, if he brings an idea to a studio and he's like, I need $200 million to make this movie, the studio is still going to be like, yeah, sure. Because he's one of the few directors whose name is simply a pull in just like him alone. Like, nobody out there is like, Peyton Reed's directing Ant-Man. Oh man, Peyton Reed. Oh my gosh, I gotta go see that. And that's nothing against Peyton Reed, but it's like, no one's in a class of his own as far as working directors today. And I think he's still there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, I don't know. Trevor, where are you at with the future?
I don't know.
Christian,
I think
Nolan?
It sounds like I liked this movie a lot more than you guys did. Which finally we like sort of halfway disagree about a movie on this podcast. We need more of that. To avoid constant fanboying, I guess. But
I'm going to start loving Transformers films.
But, but, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he's definitely reached that do whatever you want kind of thing. So I don't know. It seems like he may stick to only doing his own ideas or something come up with by his brother or David Goyer. I guess he's kind of off the David Goyer train a little bit, but I mean, I think it's going to be, he's to the point where he doesn't have to use someone else's script. He can use his own script. He's earned that. He's shown that he can do that. I mean, his worst movie is The Dark Knight Rises, and it's terrible in some ways, but not that bad. I don't know where he's going next. I'm sure he has some ideas. I'm sure he has more scripts like this that he's written, at least in a rough draft form that he's got ready to go. So I'm interested to see. He's kind of, I don't know, maybe he'll do like a rom-com. I would watch that. like a kind of like grayish, bluish overtones, a little bit gritty rom-com, like Blue Valentine, but not bad.
Oh gosh. I will say that I'm this may be, I don't know. I'll just throw it out there. I'm more interested in him getting back and telling unique and original stories in the vein of Interstellar, Inception, Prestige, Memento, like things that have a more science fiction tone to them in some regards. Because I think that those movies are his best movies. And so that's when I think he's at his best, is when he has these like original ideas and he's not adapting something. So I get that like an idea like Inception is a once in a lifetime idea, but I think, I mean, those are his best movies for me. So I'm more interested in something like that than an adaption, if that makes sense. But alrighty, let's get to our ratings of Dunkirk. Trevor, what would you rate this movie?
Oh, I think I give this a, I give it a solid A.
Wow.
Solid A. Okay. Not quite that's an fair. A plus. But I think it's interesting. It's different. It does exactly what it pulls off exactly what it tries to. I think it's a beautiful, massive spectacle. It's a masterpiece, maybe if not in totality, a masterpiece of visual storytelling. Like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of film classes in the future where your professor makes you watch this if he wants to show you how you tell a story, how you show a story and not tell a story. So yeah, I give it an A.
Awesome. Jake.
Yeah. The more I sit with it, the more I simultaneously like it and dislike it. It's a technical marvel, but the editing and story structure and characters are just so unnecessarily not there and confusing. I think it just comes back to that I don't care about these characters. And like, while it's an amazing technical achievement and had amazingly intense war moments, I didn't care. It's not a cohesive movie, but a series of moments in war. And regardless of the setting or situation, as a filmmaker, you are expected to tell an interesting story with characters the audience cares about. But instead, we're put in this like war machine experience with characters I don't care about and a story that amounts to just a collection of moments, but like not a movie. While it may be unfair to say, but I wouldn't say it for any other director, which is a compliment to Nolan, this is no Saving Private Ryan. And I mean, like Cameron said, it was being compared to Saving Private Ryan, and that it is not. With all that said, this is still a great movie. And I don't know. I'm going to give it a B, just a straight B.
All right, straight B. Yeah, like I said a little bit ago, I feel like I spent the entire podcast being negative about this movie. And the truth is that there's a lot of things to like. I think the action's entertaining. The story is an intriguing story, and I think Nolan tells it well. And the cinematography is flat out, like, beyond anything that we've seen so far this year. So I'm with Jake. It's a B. It's a B for me. Yeah. It's not great.
I want to echo what you said. Like, this is a great movie. It sounds like me and Cameron are pooping all over it, but it's because there's just like praise being heaped on this film, and I feel like none of its flaws are being talked about, and so that's why I'm just like, seems like I'm piling it on.
Yeah, and I mean, so like, I've seen multiple film sites list this as Nolan's second best film he's ever done behind The Dark Knight. And I don't even think it's in his top five. It's still a good movie. And I think Jake said this when we were in college that The Dark Knight came out, or The Dark Knight Rises came out, was that like even Nolan's worst film is still better than some people's best film.
Like almost everyone else's best film.
I think that's true here. Yeah. I think Dunkirk is still a good movie, and it's still better than what like 90% of what we're seeing. I just don't think it holds up against Inception, Prestige, The Dark Knight. Like, those three films are three of the greatest films that have come out in my lifetime. And I don't think this film is in the same class as those.
Nolan's put himself in the crappy position of, like, he's expected to win the championship every time he steps on the court. You know? Like...
Yeah.
And when he lets us down, we're like, ugh, he's washed up. And it's like, no, just he had a off game, but like, look at his stats. He still had a triple double, you know? So
yeah,
I feel like we're complaining about LeBron James's final performance
right.
or something.
I think, Jake, I think your last little bit where you summarized this movie made me think that this is basically like a Terrence Malick homage, but he cut half the script and all the narration.
Yeah, it really kind of is.
That's fair. I mean, it's also like, we're going to keep talking about it. Let's move on. Let's get to content of the week, because we're an hour and a half in, and yeah, I think that we've all said our piece on this film. Content of the week. Trevor, what are you recommending this week?
Oh, man. I had a lot of trouble with content this week. I'm going to recommend something that I have barely seen any of, because I just started it and it's kind of awesome. And that is the television series Battlestar Galactica. The one from the one from 2004, not the one from 1978 that it's loosely based on.
Isn't it a shot-for-shot remake of the original?
I think that I don't know.
It's an office joke.
Oh, okay.
Office
okay,
joke.
Okay, okay, okay.
I love that Jake said it and Trevor was like, okay.
I see what you did there. Okay, I got
Sorry.
It. I got it.
Sorry.
I got it. But yeah, I just finished the very beginning of it is 2 hour and a half installments that are one cohesive story. And I mean, the effects look like a show that was on the Sci-Fi Channel in 2004, but it's got an interesting story. It's an interesting kind of sci-fi, Blade Runner-esque kind of thing, with with robots that look like people. And it's pretty interesting. And it has Edward James Olmos, who I think is Olmos, who's one of the great actors that doesn't get talked about. It's on Hulu, so there you go.
Jeek, what's your content of the week?
We just got HBO, so I feel like I'm going to be recommending a lot of HBO things, so I apologize. But we just watched Big Little Lies on HBO. We watched the whole thing on HBO Now, and it is amazing. Like, I think it's one of the best acting ensembles performances of the year by far. I think there's already been a lot of nominations for it. But basically, just imagine like how you think that super rich families on the California coast are like absolutely picture perfect, but imagine what's happening behind closed doors. And essentially, this film, I feel like it was an 8-hour film. It was so good. This series basically opens at like a elementary school trivia night fundraiser, and somebody has been murdered, and it's basically like setting up for 8 hours all of the backstory of the characters and what happens, and the finale is like one of the most intense like finales I've seen in a long time, and it's about an elementary school trivia night. So I mean, it's just like masterclass storytelling and really, really good, really well done. So yeah, that's Big Little Lies on HBO. Highly recommend.
Does it have the good version of Shailene Woodley?
Yes, the best version. The best version.
She can be good in
The Secret Life of American Teenager.
Yes, she can be good, and in this, she's okay. Amazing.
I kind of meant The Descendants, Cam, but that's cool. Okay. Whatever.
You mean Clooney's one of his best films? Yeah, that one. Okay, not the. Now Freeform TV show. Okay, I'm going to throw out two. One, something we've already talked about, and it's that you should read Ready Player One. If you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you're a fan of movies, or you're related to one of the three of us. So either way, you should check out Ready Player One. It's a really interesting book. I'll be curious to see how they adapted into a movie, because they've already kind of said that I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it. Well, there's a lot of Spielberg references in it. Spielberg took out a lot of the Spielberg references in it, but at the same time, there's also like they're changing up the Easter eggs that are in it, and I don't Easter eggs are like the treasure hunt that they go on. But yeah, so I think it'll be interesting. I'm really excited about it. It's a really good book. I've read it a couple times, and it's still just good every single time.
Let me just say, and then the other thing I'm gonna listen to the audiobook. Let me just go ahead and let you know that right now. Don't bother. Read the book.
Okay. Read the actual book. Buy the physical copy. Read it. Enjoy it. Thank us later. The other thing I'm going to recommend is documentary. I feel like I'm about to like lose a lot of credibility, but this is generally something that I found really interesting. It's a documentary on Netflix called called The Fittest on Earth, and it's a documentary about the CrossFit Games. And there's two versions of it. There's one from the 2015 CrossFit Games, and there's one from the 2016 CrossFit Games. And it tells the story of some of the top competitors and their story as they're competing in these games. And I don't do CrossFit. I think it would break me emotionally, physically, any way possible. But I'm amazed by anything like this where people do things physically that I'm like just amazed by, because it's so much not a physical thing as it is a mental thing. And I think just that, like, watching these athletes get into this mental situation where they're doing 100 pull-ups and 300 push-ups and 200 squats and running 2 miles, like, I mean, the challenges they go through over the course of 5 days is just amazing. And the documentary has like some really entertaining people to watch. I know it's an out of left field choice, but I found it genuinely entertaining and found it genuinely interesting. So that's that. And that's episode 13 of Popcorn Optional. If you have liked listening to us tonight, please, please, please go to iTunes, like us, subscribe, tell your friends about it. Tell your friends, hey, man, there's this great podcast. You should go listen to it. You like that movie? They've talked about it. Awesome. There we go. Easy as that. Please do that. We would love, love, love to reach more people and to keep talking movies. So if you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at Popcorn Optional. If you want to read some of Jake and Trevor's amusing tweets, you can find our Twitter at Popcorn Optional on Twitter, and our Facebook is Popcorn Optional on Facebook as well. My name is Cameron Salini. You can find me at 321KMETime on Twitter. Jake, where can we find you online?
Find me at jakebrown.tv. Trevor?
I'm on the Twitter and the Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Awesome. Well, we've loved talking movies with you tonight. We hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And until next week, we will see you next week.
Bye.
Y'all be good now.